Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined by Cheryl Lindemann and Marisa Garza, and we are your primary selection team here at Cattle. This time, it's a free-for-all. We are just bringing you books that we are enjoying right now, or I haven't had a chance to share on the podcast, but we wanted to bring them to your attention. And I think I'm getting us started off with one I've been really excited to talk about. It's Dearborn by Hassan Zenedine. This one, you might have heard, there's an interview with him on NPR with Neda Hulaby. And then it's just gotten all kinds of press. This is a Tin House publication, which I absolutely loved. They put out Morgan Talty's Night of the Living Res. This really kind of had that feel to me in the sense of it's a book of short stories about a very specific area, and that very specific area is Dearborn and its surrounding communities, and it's really pulling from character, really describing a wide array of characters, mostly from the Arab American community in Dearborn. We're introduced to an actor, a wannabe actor, a DJ, a frustrated writer with a golden voice, a genderqueer halal butcher, some real estate agents, mostly sketchy. You get this in, the stories don't necessarily go where you think they're going to go. It's just a really interesting view of the community. I used to spend more time in Dearborn. I don't spend that much time there anymore, but it just sort of has that feel to me. And it's so well done, I think. And Zenedine was a co-editor of Hada Baladuna, which was a Michigan Notable last year. It was a collection of nonfiction stories, and this is his, he was an instructor at University of Michigan Dearborn, and this is kind of a culmination of his experiences moving into that community, living in that community, moving into that community, and finding, having never been in such an Arab-heavy community, this was such a fascinating thing for him. You'll hear him say in multiple interviews. So this is, it's really well done. This is a great set of stories, and I just think everybody should know about it.
I am really excited to finish that book. I started it, and I plan to actually listen to it on the way to Dearborn.
And the audio really is very good.
I'm going to Dearborn this weekend, so I'm going to listen to
Dearborn. There you go.
Well, my title is also kind of a Michigan-connected book. It's Enemies in the Orchard by Dana Vandergloot. I don't know if that's the correct pronunciation. This is a World War II novel in verse, and it is based on a true story. So what it was fascinating to me about this verse novel, historical novel, was the fact that I didn't know that Michigan at one time had around 6,000
even more
captive German and Italian soldiers in Michigan. This would have been in 1944-ish. There was an agreement where, I mean, the POWs were allowed to come over to Michigan and work for a very, small stipend while they were, you know, in captivity, I guess you could say. And they did so primarily on the west side of the state. So this is a back-and-forth story of Claire DeBoer and Carl Hartman, who is the German POW. And Carl is working on Claire's family farm, picking apples. And they have very little contact with each other, but they do run into each other in the orchard. They help one another in the family store. And there's this book is really filled with a lot of tension in that a lot of the community is like, you know, to Mr. DeBoer, well, what are you doing? Why do you have these enemy soldiers in our community? So there was just a lot of people feeling unsure about whether or not this was a good thing. But the father, Mr. DeBoer, is really portrayed as someone who is very just gentle, happy, and not going to be fearful at all. And he extends his generosity of spirit to these men, some who are actually still Nazi sympathizers. Carl was not. But I just was really fascinated by this collection of like back and forth sort of stories. There's a little bit of poetry to it. And it's a very calm book, I guess you could say, but also it's kind of filled with, like I said, tension, I guess you could say. Hmm. It is based on Dana Vanderlug's grandfather's history in, I want to say, near Portage, but I could be wrong. Lots of interesting things that you'll think about while reading mm-hmm. this. So.
Yeah, that one is very definitely on my list of things to read. Mm-hmm.
I was not aware of that at all, I have to say. I grew up on the west side of the state, and it was not that was really new to me. I feel like, again, our books are sort of threading in a really interesting way, because I feel like there's a theme with all of them of our stories that haven't been told very much, or haven't been told from particular perspectives in all mm-hmm. the books that we've talked about so far. This brings me to my book for today, my first book, which is A Man of Two Faces, A Memoir, A History, A Memorial by Viet Thanh Nguyen. And this was on the long list for the National Book Award. You may recognize the author's name from The Sympathizer, with Pulitzer Prize-winning fiction book that he wrote. And this is a book that, one, I can't stop thinking about. You know, I need to add this to my home collection. I'm going to have to keep, you know, go back to it again. It is, there's so many threads in this book. I think there are probably about 100 threads you could talk about. So if you wanted to discuss it, it's a good book for that. But it is, it is searing. It is scathing. It is very political. It is extremely powerful. I would say it's extremely important. I do think this is a book that people will be talking about for a long time. it is at once, it's not your typical memoir, and it's intentionally that way. It's a meditation on memory in memoir. How do I remember something as the memoirist or as someone writing a book? But is that really, if I'm remembering my mother and father, is that really their story? Can I tell their story? Or am I just telling what I know of them? It is a memorial to his mother. It's a memorial to the country that they left behind, really, and Vietnam. They came over here as refugees after the fall of Saigon, and they were sponsored by families, which meant at 4 years old, he was separated from his parents for a while and put into a separate home until they were reunited and settled in Pennsylvania. And they ended up going to San Jose, and his family started a Vietnamese grocery store, variety type store. It sold a lot of goods. They worked extremely hard at that store to provide for him and his brother. And so it's really this is a book of just love for his parents and honoring his mother's memory. She's passed on, but also delving into some really deep embedded memories that he had that he'd actually stuffed down. His mother ended up in a psychiatric facility at one point, actually 3 points, and he sort of tucked that away. So through the memoir itself, he's reckoning with himself and pulling out things that were painful and trying to understand them. So this is a memoir questioning and examining and digging into the concept of the American dream. Who is that for? Of being othered. He is a professor, and when he wanted to study what he wanted to study, which would be Asian American literature, he was told, well, that's great by an advisor. That's good, but you probably won't be able to get a job doing that. You know, so it's reckoning with that too, studying Asian American literature in academia. Way too much here to talk about, but I have to say, if you're interested in memoir history, if you are interested in political memoir, and about looking at stories from real perspectives, I think this would be a great book to pick up.
Yeah, that, yes. Just yes. All right. So my other book that I wanted to talk about, and this goes to the so many different layers in this particular book. It's The Mountain in the Sea by Ray Naylor. This is a really big splash when it came out. It's an award-winning book for a first novel. It was nominated for all the Sci-Fi Awards the year it came out. It is a near-future thriller, and I will focus. The main storyline follows a scientist specializing in cephalopods, and she's invited to a Vietnamese archipelago that has been, all of the locals have been relocated. And on this archipelago, there is now the world's first sentient android running the exploration of stories in the community about a sea monster. And what the sea monster actually is a very, very developed octopus community. And this is sort of, this author is very involved in conservation, very well-versed and read up on octopus and the fact that they don't particularly, they're mainly considered very individual, solitary, whereas this is a community that they have discovered. They are studying the octopus, and what they find fairly quickly is that the octopus is studying them. It's very much, it's a sort of a first contact, but with a species that's here. It's very, very meditative in terms of thinking about what it means to be sentient. Again, we've got this android that's on the team that believes he exists, believes he, you know, is a person or is a sentient individual, what it means to communicate, what it means to be conscious. And that's literally just one of the storylines. There are two other very strong ones that are in the mix, and it's very much it all dealing with those sort of topics, but tying together in a very interesting and fascinating way. This is actually, fans of Soul of an Octopus might really get something out of this. It was very, I mean, there's no question. I mean, in the acknowledgments, he goes through the number of different books that he's used as part of, you know, just as part of his learning. And then there's also, if you, I talked about Our Wives Under the Sea on a previous podcast by Julia Armfeld, and that was one where the partner is turning into a sea creature. And it's, again, it's another exploration, something that's happened as a result of deep sea exploration. It's... The sci-fi aspect, the philosophical aspect of it, the psychological aspects of it, it's really very interesting, and there's a lot. Downtown Lansing's speculative fiction book discussion group really just did this, and it was one of the best discussions we've had in a while because there's just so much going on in it, and it's such good writing. And I'm actually really interested. I am not going to come up with the title, but I will put it in the show notes. His next book deals with... bringing back mammoths and then how they kind of work around genetically bringing back and raising mammoths and trying to keep them. And it's, wow. The question is why and how do you save them and have them, you know how to be a mammoth, for example.
Yeah.
So it's just a, cool. I am very, and the cover is amazing. But it's just, I think Ray Naylor will be somebody I'm going to, you know, I will definitely be looking hard anytime I see his name pop up.
That's awesome. Sounds so good.
Well, I have another title. It is called, it is Stranded, a Mostly True Story from Iceland. And the story is by Ívar Pór Benediktsson, and the art is by Ann Wilson. This is just a lovely book. I laughed so much when I reread it recently. This is the based on a true story about someone's grandfather who went over to the island of Surtsey when it was first when a volcano was first discovered in that area, and how he got stuck there. It is I think the way the author puts the story together is just kind of genius in some ways, because it makes it really, really funny. He's got all these things in parentheses. To get to the island, you hitch a ride with a local fisherman, like you do. And, he's constantly giving this, like, all the things that his grandfather's doing on the island. It's like, but remember, there's an active volcano here. And there is. There's an active volcano. They end up getting stuck there, and they decide to sleep near this area of the volcano where it's kind of warm because it's so cold. And he's like, again, he's like, well, you know, that's not really a very good idea. That's not very but each, you know, they end up spending like a full night there because their ride never comes back to pick them up on the island. This was in 1964. I really liked it because it kind of depicts, it starts out with like, you know, the spread of what an Icelandic home looks like, how he was connected, how close he was to his grandfather. And there's a little bit of a mystery in it too. He kind of tells you at the beginning that he's supposed to be finding this thing in the book that isn't true. So throughout the reading, I think a parent would really enjoy reading this to their child or children, looking for what is it that isn't true? What will you recognize that isn't true in the story? I can't tell you how much I really like this book, not just because I'm really interested in Iceland, but just the way it was presented was very funny.
Yeah.
Very cool.
That's really unique. Very cool. Well, the last book that I have is called The Other Family Doctor. A Veterinarian Explores What Animals Can Teach Us About Love, Life, and Mortality by Karen Fine, DVM. And this was a book that came out this year as well, and there was some press about it when it came out. I have to admit, I am going to probably read every veterinarian memoir. As somebody who wanted to be a veterinarian and didn't become one, I remain fascinated with it and an animal lover. But I can definitely say, as a nonfiction selector for our library system, that our members really like these types of stories,
sure,
too. And that relationship that people have with their pets is just so strong, and, you know, if you have a pet, you understand it. Some people might have a little bit of a hard time, depending on if they have difficulty reading about euthanasia, because that is involved in this book. But it is a really warm and beautiful book. I absolutely love this book. It was there's a piece of memoir in there where she tells you about her background. Her grandfather was a doctor in South Africa. About that bond that she had with him. She inherited his medical kit. He did house calls. She ends up going through veterinary school at Tufts, and she explains that too. And during a time when there weren't as many female veterinarians, and she talks a lot about the challenges of that. But she eventually makes a house call business, and she takes you on the house calls. And so there's a little bit of that James Harriet piece there. It's small animal vet work. But she takes you and you meet pets and their owners that are really unforgettable, these really beautiful stories. But you also learn about her evolution as a regular vet, but into a holistic vet. She does take acupuncture training and includes that. And then she starts investigating and learning and using something called narrative medicine, which is really wonderful. It's very holistic. It's making sure that she understands the stories. She doesn't like it when an animal is dropped off. That's the worst, because she doesn't know the story. She says she really needs to talk to the family and say, okay, when did they stop eating? What do they usually eat? Where do they usually sleep? And getting that really good, full storytelling piece. And she's also part of a movement called the One Health Community, which is doctors, human doctors, animals, and environmentalism sort of mixed together, thinking about how all these things interplay. But she talks about the mental health crisis of veterinarians. It is the highest suicide rate of professions. She talks about why that is. Compassion fatigue, how narrative medicine can help with compassion fatigue, because you love the clients, but you turn it into a story, and you can sort of move the story away from you then. It's the story of the animals and the clients. It doesn't have to always become your story. There's a lot about euthanasia in here, and about how it's become sort of almost a spiritual sort of experience for her, because she can feel that love at that end moment, and how she, you know, you have to reckon with that as a vet. And it is hard. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really get easier. It just gets different. And the role that euthanasia plays in the life of an animal and in the life of the family that owns the animal. And it also is about her own pets and her own challenges with severe medical conditions with her own pets, and how she dealt with that, even with all the training, all the experience she had, what it felt like to go with that, in particular with her four-year-old dog that developed oral cancer, and how challenging that was. So it's just very beautiful and so warm, and just a fantastic book. There's a lot of really good information in the back about grieving a loss of a pet, and she even has information about creating a pet obituary and how to do that and why that might be helpful and important and what to do with that afterwards. So really, really good book.
Very cool. Yeah. So we got a lot of really neat books going. We hope you found something in them that you want to grab, but happy reading.